And this is Chester's D Radio, Thursday morning, and the first Thursday of every month, I always welcome somebody from Oliver & Co. to the studio, and this particular month, it's Tim Poulding. Morning, Tim.
Morning, Gavin.
Your specialism is business law.
Yes, that's right. I'm a corporate and commercial solicitor with 30-plus years' experience now.
Well, we're going to talk a bit about exactly what your job involves after the next song, but if I was to ask you to put it into 20 seconds... What does being a business lawyer entail? What would you say?
Well, I provide support to owner-managed businesses and the directors of larger SME-sized businesses to ensure that they can protect and grow their business towards an ultimate exit strategy.
Well, that's music to the ears of every business owner, I would have thought. And this is Chester's D Radio. Tim Poulding is my guest. He's a specialist business law solicitor working at Oliver & Co. And you just gave us a sort of a brief overview just before that song, Tim, about what it is you do. What's the, you know, what is the most frequent request that you get from your clients?
Oh, good question. I think the two things that crop up more than any others are how to approach customer contracts and supplier contracts. So we do a lot of work with clients across many different sectors, drafting their terms and conditions of business, longer term supply agreements, perhaps if they've got a relationship that's going to be for a longer period rather than just one-off individual transactions. So that's one side of what we get asked about a lot, and that can be online trading, e-commerce platforms, or it can be people working in manufacturing or engineering, or in even in professional services. So that's one side. The other thing that we get asked about really on a very regular basis is business planning and succession planning with that business, because it's pretty rare for a new business startup, the owner is thinking about where they're going to end up, but the sooner they start thinking about what their objectives are ultimately in terms of an exit strategy, what they're hoping to achieve there in realizing the value from their business, the better for them.
So the client will come to you with a rough overview and you would sort of hone what they're thinking, would you, and give them some advice to make sure that they can achieve what they're setting out to achieve?
Absolutely. We'd look at a number of options for them in terms of succession planning, one of which I know we're going to go on to talk about in a minute, which is employee ownership trusts. And we would devise the most suitable strategy for them to achieve those business objectives.
And how easily, or how well, I suppose, has the law kept up with the digital revolution? Because so much work is done online these days, and we hear quite often that the law struggles to keep up with the rapid pace of technological change that we're experiencing.
Well, Gavin, I think that's a very fair point, and in fact, over the years, the law has struggled quite significantly in that respect, but more recently, over the last few years, there has been an improvement there, and increasingly we're seeing legislation being introduced by the government that is designed to better protect and assist businesses with those challenges that are presented by the digital age that we're now living in.
Yeah.
It's growing at such pace that is now just going to be a regular feature, I think, of government policy and government legislation.
It's to keep it up with it that's the real challenge, isn't it?
Indeed.
Well, I mean, what are the biggest pitfalls, would you say, that you would advise clients to do their best to steer clear of, or you would try and steer them away from? Where could it all go wrong, potentially, without you? With you, obviously, it's always going to go right 100% of the time.
Absolutely. but in reality, there are very many problems and pitfalls that can befall a business. Accountants can be very helpful and supportive in identifying what some of those might be from a financial point of view. Obviously, if you're trading with your customers and you are allowing them 90 days to pay you for your goods or services, but your suppliers want paying on 30 days, that's going to be a very speedy route to the business collapsing.
Yeah.
So, you know, making sure you've got your contractual relationships right with customers and suppliers is key. But also things that are often overlooked on the regulatory side, making sure as a company, you file your confirmation statement, which is the old annual return that has to be filed at company's house once a year, making sure that you file your accounts on time, your tax returns on time, so that you don't incur penalties and you don't end up in a situation where Companies House strikes your company off the register for failing to make those returns.
That can happen, can it?
That can absolutely happen, and when it does, then all of the assets of the company effectively go to the Crown, which is rather topical this week. It's known as bona vacantia, and the only way then for you to get your company and the assets back is to make a lengthy and expensive application to the court to have the company restored to the register.
That is to be avoided at all costs.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things to remember, and it's not just doing them once, is it? You know, returns to HMRC and so on, accounts, that's a yearly issue that's got to be managed and remembered and not fall through any cracks if you're busy doing other stuff.
No, and Companies House over the years have made it easier. You can register with them for online email reminders of when these things are due so that they don't get overlooked as they may have been in the past, because often a company's trading address is not its registered office address. So Companies House might write to a registered office address and the business owner who's based at the trading address may not be aware that these things are due and need attention.
Well, that makes sense, because I know that our registered address is completely different as a radio station from where we trade from, so that's it makes sense there. Just one final thing, I suppose it's all down to the wording, is it, when you're putting contracts together, because you lawyers are clever types, aren't you? And if somebody was to want to challenge a contract down the line that you'd put into place, you need to make sure it's absolutely watertight.
It's very important, and I think it's difficult for clients sometimes to appreciate the value of having a lawyer who understands this area look their contracts over for them. They often put things together themselves or will create a Frankenstein's monster of a contract based upon various different sets of terms and conditions that they may have come across on the internet or from competitor companies, and that is usually a recipe for disaster.
So, I mean, you can do something as simple as just reading over a contract and advising that it's okay, or it would be a lot better if that paragraph wasn't there and this paragraph was, and so on.
Absolutely, we do a lot of that work mainly for sort of micro businesses and startup businesses, but also we have retainer arrangements with much larger clients that have a great many different customer and supplier agreements, often running into 30, 40 pages, and before they sign them, they will send them to us to review and make sure that we're happy with everything.
I would as well if I had a 30 or 40 page contract to read. I wouldn't be reading it myself. We'll come back and we'll talk about employee ownership, which I know is something that takes place at Oliver & Co. And Tim Poulding is here. I mean, Tom Grennan was singing a song called Here, but Tim Poulding is really here from Oliver & Co, a business law solicitor. We've spoken about some of what you do on a day-to-day basis, but I want to talk specifically with you now, Tim, about 100% employee-owned companies, which is becoming more of a thing. And I know at Oliver & Co, you've shifted to that model last year, didn't you?
We did, yes, back in October 2022. The owners of the company at the time sold the shares to a trust that was formed for the benefit of the employees that work in the business. And it's fantastic from the point of view of the employees, because they have an opportunity to have a say in the way in which the business is run going forward. They have an opportunity to benefit financially from the success of the business. And they don't have to put in any of their own money to be able to do that. So in terms of the tax advantages for the employees, they can earn a profit share of up to £3,600 a year, tax-free. That's in addition to their rights as an employee, because none of that will change. They're still employed within the company. Any profit share that they become entitled to over and above the £3,600 a year will be taxed, will be subject to income tax. But you know, that's a good incentive for people.
Yeah.
To
well, that's £300 tax free a month, isn't it? Additional.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's something that is going to make them want to commit to the firm. Yeah. I think in terms of staff retention, in terms of recruitment, the idea of being an employee-owned business is an attractive one, and more and more businesses are starting to think that way.
So if it's advantageous for the employee and it's advantageous for the business, who's picking up the slack?
Well, in terms of the way the transaction is structured financially, this type of succession planning or exit strategy for a business works best for a business that is a stable business with potential for further growth, but most importantly is a profitable business. So ordinarily there will be money in the bank, there will be, you know, a profitable position on the accounts, and at the point the transaction happens, the owners of the business who are stepping back will usually be in a position where they can take some of the purchase price, some of the value of their business out at that point, and then the balance that is due to the owners, the former owners, will be generated from the future profitability of the company over a defined period. And that can be as little as 2 or 3 years, it may be 7, 8, 9 years, depending upon the payment structure. And that's where we come in and the accountants come in to look at the framework to ensure that the, if we go down this route for the business, it's a viable route that will not damage the financial position of the company going forward.
I mean, it sounds like it's a win-win-win, but not in every circumstance, I'm guessing. So what, you know, what is it that prevents every company from becoming 100% employee owned? Why don't we all do it tomorrow?
Well, it's again down to the finances really and the financial performance of the company. If in the years leading up to a switch to employee ownership, that business has perhaps underperformed, perhaps not been profitable, and doesn't have the funding available to make a substantial payment, significant proportion of the purchase price to the outgoing owners, then that would be the first problem. Yeah. Secondly, even if it was able to raise the funding to do that, and some banks are prepared to lend to a business in order to facilitate a transaction, provided the company is financially viable and with a good plan going forward. Even if they're able to overcome that hurdle, then if the business is not in a position where it is going to achieve the same or improved financial performance in future years, then it won't be able to service both the payments that will be due to the former owners of the business and create a profit, whether that profit is distributed to the new employee ownership trust, or whether that profit is simply needed to maintain working capital for other projects within the business. So it really comes down to the financial position as to whether that works. The only other factor that I think is relevant there is also whether or not the management team within the business going forward has sufficient skill and experience to be able to at least perform as well as the former owners in those roles, or preferably better.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things at Oliver & Co that's been a significant part of the process for us is to ensure that people at key levels within the business have had the opportunity to do leadership development training to enhance those skills and get that experience, and we're now rolling that out to other members of staff across the whole firm so that they have a greater understanding of what's needed.
And you of course can help other firms who are considering going down this route from the get-go.
I mean, there's about 1,200 companies that have become employee-owned businesses, of which relatively small number are other law firms. We're certainly the largest in the Northwest that's made that transition, and one of the advantages of going through that process along the way is not only do in the corporate and commercial team we have the skill set to do the technical side of the work for a business owner looking to go down this route, we can also provide consultancy advice on the, if you like, the cultural shift that comes as part of this.
Because you've gone through.
We've seen some of the things that come up along the way, and it's early days, and it's proving to be successful from our perspective, but equally there's been challenges to look at and things that staff have raised that we've needed to address.
Well, that's bound to happen, isn't it? I suppose John Lewis is the most famous example of this, or is that a slightly different model?
No, it's a very similar model these days, but they are probably the oldest, not just the best known, in terms of, I think it was 1929 when they first started going down the route towards employee ownership. In recent years, some other famous names have come up as well as employee-owned businesses. Aardman Animations, for anyone who's a Wallace and Gromit fan out there,
who isn't
employee-owned. Richer Sounds, rather nearer your area of expertise, have become employee owned. And for those who like the outdoors, Go Ape, and in fact there's several sites all over the company, all over the country, and it's an employee owned business.
Okay, so people who are thinking they would like to move in that direction, or at least find out more about it, or any other business law issues, how do we get hold of you, Tim, or your team?
Well, always, first things first, always happy to have a no obligation chat with any business owner who is looking for support. And if they want to talk specifically about succession planning and employee ownership trusts, the best thing to do is contact me direct. My number is 01244 354 697, or you can email me at tim.polding@oliverandco.co.uk.
I will read that out again after the next song. Tim, thanks for coming in. Good to see you again.
Good to see you guys.